Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am so excited to be in the studio today with my friends Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Good morning, Natalie.
And Dan McKay on the right.
Good morning, Natalie, and everyone else.
And we need to talk, guys, about our neighboring state, Nevada, Las Vegas, this terrible tragedy that happened there. I was struck in the past week by a column that Peggy Noonan wrote in the Wall Street Journal, and she reflected about how when she heard the news, she was not shocked, and that's what horrified her, because this has become such a common occurrence. And she used the term, this is not the new normal. She said, this is the new abnormal. And I just thought it was a very poignant column and really makes the point that we've just come to accept this. And I find that so unacceptable. Dan, you're on the right. The right gets in the way of some of the proposed public policy interventions, gun control, responsible gun ownership, whatever you want to rephrase it as. What are you willing to do in light of where this country sits?
Well, this is not an issue that is going to be easy to deal with for anybody, right? And I think Peggy Noonan also had an article later that talked about why people really want guns and what their motivations are for having them, distrust of government. She labeled a whole bunch of other reasons that I thought were actually pretty interesting, interesting thinking. What always happens, and I thought what was sad kind of about this deal is how quick it's already fading into the background for the conversation.
Just like Newtown did.
Yeah. And your question was, what are we willing to do? I think if you go back and look at the causes of the issue, I think we can start to look at the issue and start to realize where the problem is. We continue to look at symptoms and try to cut off the symptoms and expect that to solve the problem. And I would argue that hasn't been the solution, and that hasn't done any good for anybody.
So Jim, Dan is referring to all of the quantitative data. You know, there's a lot of data that would suggest that you can do a lot to control guns and it won't change things. And I just find real problems with that, even though I'm very much a data-driven person in public policy. Your perspective.
I saw a tweet. It was a comment on the Associated Press headline that said Las Vegas concert is deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history with at least 50 dead. And then somebody was commenting and they said, I've seen this headline three times in my life, Virginia Tech, Orlando, and now Las Vegas. I'm only 22 years old. Mm. It goes back to your point, Natalie. Look, I'm not buying this. Mm-hmm. They say we have mentally ill and we have to do this.
Guns don't kill people. People do.
Look at England. Look at England or Canada. I mean, that mass murderer there grabs a knife in downtown London and kills four or five people, and then they are taken care of. This idea, 500 people were shot in Las Vegas. This idea that, that's just the price of freedom, baloney.
Yeah. Okay, so we have an upcoming legislative session coming. Brian King, he's the minority leader in the House. He's proposing legislation to ban the sale of bump stocks. I'm just sort of like, that's not it. I mean,
no.
I'm okay with that legislation, but we are out of kilter. There is a balance problem here.
Yeah. How do you propose getting back to balance, Natalie?
I would start with seeing guns more like I see driver's licenses. Cars don't kill people. People do. And yet we still do a lot with driver's licenses to regulate the freedom to drive. And I think that a lot of the things that we allow in this country, let's give it a try. Let's try and have more registrations of guns. Let's try to eliminate some things from private sale, from making them legal.
Let's have
more training.
The hard part.
Let's invest more in mental health issues. But it has become just a tragic thing about our country, and we live,
But defending yourself, Natalie, can't be a right that the government gets to control. I totally understand the desire to limit mass shootings, I think, is shared by everyone.
Mm-hmm. No question.
The ability to infringe on someone else's rights, anytime you take a right or give a right to someone else, You have to take it from someone else. It's not a give and take, or it's not a, you know, the pie is big enough for everybody. You are literally taking from someone else. And I look at this whole issue, and I know everyone probably listening to me may disagree, but I just look at the ability to defend oneself as a fundamental right that doesn't even come from the government. It is an inherent human right. And so the idea that you're going to place it below the ability to, I don't know, have free speech or whatever it may be, I just think those rights are inalienable, and there's no way to, for the government to get in the way.
I watched GPS Fareed Zakaria's Global Public Square program on Sunday. He gave the whole hour to this issue, and he outlined how things are in Canada and Australia and different parts of Europe. He went to Japan, which is incredibly restrictive. Dan, I would argue that those places in this case are more free than we are, not less free. Because of the price we pay for the way we fail to, you know, limit guns in this country. So that's a view from the middle. Any last comments on that?
No.
Are you hearing any other rumors about things at the state level that will happen beyond bump stocks?
The bump stock thing won't even happen. I mean,
really?
You got to look at the sponsor. I mean, I love Brian, and he's running it for a message bill. There's already a bill that's opened in D.C. to look at this issue and to try and shut down the sale of these bump stocks. I think that will probably have a little more progress than I think. Unfortunately, you're not going to see, quote, responsible, quote, reasonable, quote, any of those things like moderate from Brian King on gun control or any other issue. And so, unfortunately, the sponsor somewhat taints the issue. And I think if something does happen, you'll see it come out of, you know, someone who has more experience in the gun range.
Yeah, interesting. Hey, we
come
had,
on.
We
Tell
had
me
this
I'm wrong,
other
Jim.
We had this other bit of news this week that dealt with the Antiquities Act, where I think it was Congressman Bishop who wanted to have some limitations to the Antiquities Act that you can't designate.
Did you see the details?
So much of an area,
anything
640
more than
acres.
10,000 feet.
No.
Or no, sorry. No. Anything more than 10,000 acres require the legislature, the governor, approval in addition to Congress?
640 acres.
Is it really that small?
640
acres. For some reason, I thought it was 10,000.
Well, if it, either one, Jim, there's something to be said for limiting some of this power because Bears Ears is 1.1 million acres?
Yeah.
Am I getting that number right?
You know.
And so, you know, you're supposed to go preserve something that is, you know, in any day is going to be violated by, you know, development or something. And so you're supposed to do the smallest area possible, and then you do 1.1 million acres.
You know, the state would have a modicum of credibility about this. Mm-hmm. Had they gone to the table with the Obama administration, had they been serious, had they had legislation, had they had negotiation, if they were not at every turn selling off Sitla land for small prices, blocking access to outdoors people. The state has no credibility.
Mm-hmm.
They collect so much money personally from either business or from campaign contributions, from the fossil fuel industry. Their hands are just dripping. So I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe Bishop when he says, we really want to protect these things. 640 acres, that's his proposal. And you can't do more than one within 50 miles. And then on the other hand, every president can go along and unilaterally take away up to 85,000 acres. This isn't serious. We need people in Washington who will get serious and stop all the blah, blah, phony political shenanigans. That's what we really need.
I don't know what the right balance is, but I know that what we have right now is just a political game of, you know, the development interests and the preservation interests just throwing bombs at
one another. Well, it has to be. That you take away everything else, look at when those rights are exercised. It's always during a Democratic administration, and they always stick it to Utah.
Yeah. Hey, we have a lot more to talk about in our next segment. I'm with Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Guys, I work for the Eccles School. We had a group of deans from the Western United States in Deer Valley this week, so I've been with a lot of deans of business schools, and it was interesting to me how much they all wanted to talk about politics. There's all these things in business to talk about, entrepreneurship, you know, innovation, leadership, management, whatever it is, but they are all interested in talking about politics. And so we have in this state this Orrin Hatch situation. The Senate pro tem, senior senator from our state. How many years, Dan, has he been in? 42
by the end of
42
his term.
42 years. In most campaign cycles, he would have already, someone, you know, he would have already announced that he's in or not in, and, mm-hmm. and we're going on. And Hatch has basically said he's in, but he reserves the right to get out if he wants.
Yeah.
And so in the process, we've got this list of the Josh Romneys, the Thomas Wrights, the Boyd Mathisons, Derek Millers, others. Dan's name is mentioned from time to time. There are others. But enter Steve Bannon, that darn former White House guy of Breitbart, is all of a sudden intervening in our elections. Who wants to set up the color commentary on what he's been doing with Boyd Mathison and the leader of the Sutherland Institute?
I mean, this is outrageous. Leave Utah alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't need this clown. This serious, serious clown, I got to say. Back in Washington or wherever
deal.
He makes his machinations, and who apparently can bring millions of dollars to the table, we don't need him interfering.
He has a Karl Rove quality to him, not so much in his politics as in his influence and his political sophistication. I'm thinking, Dan?
Yeah, I'll tell you what this is. This is the Donald Trump administration has now been in office since January 20th, and everyone is saying, what have you done? And so it is clear in D.C. and outside of D.C. that the Senate is the weak link. And so everybody's saying, well, what do we need to do? And it keeps coming back to, we have weak leadership in the Senate, and as a result of the inability to wrangle that caucus to get anything done, I think everyone is kind of pointing at Mitch McConnell, at Senator McConnell from Kentucky, and is saying, hey, there's a problem there. He's not up for election next year, so let's aim at the people that are frustrated, or sorry, not frustrated, who are supporters of McConnell, so that in the next Senate leadership election, we change the tone of that conversation.
Dan, can
this
I
is
ask
very
you,
inside baseball, but you know.
What about Mike Lee? I mean, we know where Hatch would be. Mm-hmm. Mike Lee is contemptuous of Orrin Hatch. They have been. They can barely be in the same room. The question
I think they're
is
professional.
Well, okay, they can be in the same room, but
yeah,
but yeah. But where does that put Mike Lee? Is he part of this conspiracy to overthrow the current leadership? If anybody is, you would think it would be Cruz and Lee. Is he back there plotting somewhere?
I think if you look at the specific issues and how they've developed, I think Lee would like to see a change in leadership, even though you'll never hear his office say that. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And Mike hasn't told me one way or the other a feeling on this. But I can imagine, based on the inability to get things done. And remember, this was the downfall of Speaker Boehner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could not get anything forward. They couldn't make any changes. And as a result, there was a upending. And a guy who wasn't even in House leadership became the leader of the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives in the U.S. So I think you can look at the Senate and you're saying, well, if this caucus is unable to get anything, the Senate majority leader's not great either. So you keep looking through and look down the chain of leadership, and I'm wondering where that leadership caucus is going to end and
so
where it's going to be.
So you're seeing these, bigger trends in our country and the U.S. Senate that attract Steve Bannon's attention. So the issue becomes, why is Steve Bannon coming to Utah and going to candidates like Boyd Mathison saying, I'll fund you?
Boyd Mathison, the right-wing guy who heads up the Sutherland Institute, the guy who wrote the amicus brief on the bakery. This is a very, very conservative head of a very, very, very,
very
conservative, dangerous
former
organization.
Chief of staff for Senator Lee. But I've
makes
got to tell you,
point.
Boyd is someone whom I feel like I know well, and he's a pretty reasonable guy, and I don't see him as a Bannon type at all. That's been my experience.
Well, and it will be interesting because my recollection is not 100% clear, but I think he was pretty public in his support of F. McMullen. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, but I remember that being, you know, he wasn't terribly interested. And candidly, you know, Utah had this issue during the November election, especially in end of October, with the demeanor, right? And mm-hmm. and we have a leadership model that we look to in the state of Utah, and it is generally, for the most part, in the state of Utah, still a majority, we look to leaders of the LDS Church and their demeanor and how they conduct business, and it is not with the same gregarious nature that the Trump administration
gregarious?
Is. How do you like that?
Natalie, can I bring up one thing? Because I think something dramatic in the future of the Republic is going to happen over the next few months. That is, Mr. Mueller is going to come out with his report.
We'll be talking about this on both sides.
But I think there's going to be indictments. I think we might even have a president who's an unindicted co-conspirator.
We may have an impeachment proceeding.
And then my point is, it's going to come down to the Utah delegation. Where are they going to go? We know what Trump is going to say. He's going to say, it's the media, there's nothing here, they're just trying to get me, it's the conspiracy, it's all fake news. And our delegation...
No, I'm calling it fake news. I'm not saying... I'm just saying what you're saying is fake news.
Okay. All right. You can say that. I thought you were adding to my point.
No.
So now it's going to come down to this serious FBI guy with his reports, with mounds of evidence, with a report, and then you're going to have the buffoon there saying it's all fake news. And guess who's going to decide? It's going to be Chris Stewart. It's going to be Mia Love. It's going to be Orrin Hatch. It's going to be Lee. Well, at least in the beginning, it'll be just Lee and Hatch. But, well, no, the House. It starts in the House. Mm-hmm. My question is, where are these guys? Where are their principles? Where are their guts? Where does Stewart stand against the guy he said is our Mussolini? This is going to happen, and the future of the Republic might be hanging in the balance here. Because imagine a Trump who faces those accusations and the Republican House and Senate refuse to do anything. Imagine how that's going to empower him.
Jim, what I find so interesting about your point is that many of the listeners may or may not know this, but a lot of people in the inside baseball world will know these things weeks, months before they happen. Is this fair, Dan?
Yeah.
I mean, you knew problems in the AG's office well before it was being put in the paper, right?
Yeah, fair.
I remember when I knew Governor Leavitt was going to resign as governor and take EPA. I mean, I knew that, you know, weeks and months before the public did. And so I bring it up in your point because there's people in Washington right now that know some things that are about to hit in this country that will be a pretty big deal.
What are our guys and gals going to do?
Yeah.
Are they going to have the moral courage to go where the facts lead them? Or are they going to be looking at that little conservative delegate on their shoulder and doing what's politically?
Yeah. Or they may know that none of this is going to happen, and you don't know that. So, hey, let's do something though. Dan used the term gregarious. It made me think of all the women running for public office. We have all these positive, well-spoken, people that are vying for office. Looks like Provo after this election will have its first mayor. First female mayor, I should say. So that's going to be a cool thing. We have a lot of women running in city council races, including, Dan, your wife, Tani McKay, in Riverton City Council. We've got a BYU student, a female, running for the Provo City Council. This could be a good election for women in our state.
That's great.
Yeah.
Right? It's good news.
Yeah. More balance, more perspective.
Big celebration. 157 years, Provo's a city, and they're going to have their first woman mayor. Whoopee! And Utah County is going to be up to 5% of their mayors if they elect her, matching that breakthrough 19% in Salt Lake County, which is the best that Utah has to offer. We are so far behind. I say more power to them, but let's not celebrate too much.
Hey, Jim, since we're not celebrating too much, what is the highest ranking female elected official in the state of Utah?
I can tell you the most powerful woman is in the world.
No, I'm just talking, who is our highest ranking elected official in the state of Utah?
Mia.
Okay. So should we replace her with another white male
Democrat?
Mormon?
Or Democrat in his case.
Or Democrat in that perspective?
Look, I'm saying one.
Why are you advocating on one hand and then on the other hand saying we're off base, we don't have enough women, and the next thing you want to do is you want to run somebody to get rid of the highest ranking female representative in the state?
I'm going to let Natalie answer that one.
Well, I'm just going to say one thing people don't know in this state is how many high ranking women there are. I mean, the Salt Lake Airport, you know, was run by Maureen. You had the Federal Reserve Bank in this state run by a woman. The University of Utah has some powerful women. Ruth Watkins, who's the senior VP
up
there.
Isn't it time for a Ruth Watkins to be president?
She's on the list, and she would be terrific. But we have a lot of powerful women.
No doubt.
And I think the most powerful woman in the world is Janet Yellen.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, some more kind of interesting things to happen.
I thought you were going to say the most powerful woman in my world is my wife. That's a whole other issue.
Hey, guys, what'd you think of Mike Pence walking out of that NFL football game to protest the kneeling of players? It was such a setup. Like, you knew that his wife had something in the oven, you know, to get back to.
Oh, yeah, Bree.
I made that up on the fly, but
yeah,
but
nice.
They weren't, you know, they knew it was going to happen.
Within seconds, there was a solicitation showing him marching out, and they made several hundred thousand dollars to make up for all the cost of Air Force Two to go there. Give me a break.
Sure, but I'm going to say the whole thing is staged. Taking a knee during the national anthem, showing the fist.
Yeah.
That's all staged. Well, so the fact that there is a return of the stage probably I thought was fair.
Well, especially that the knee started to go down because of Black Lives Matter and the like. And right now it's to protest a Trump administration. I mean, it's just different. Guys, have you been in the new new NBA, the Utah Jazz Arena?
Yes.
Vivian Smart Home?
Yes.
Jim, have you been in it?
Been in it.
I love it. What a cool thing for this
padded
community.
Padded seats are awesome.
Yeah, I love
it. It's beautiful.
Okay, we need to go to gripes, and I have a really important one this week, so you guys got to save me time. But Dan, we'll go to you first on gripes.
Oh, no. I was afraid of that. I was starting to think about an
important
gripe.
Do you want me to do mine, and you can react to mine?
Yeah, I want to hear your gripe.
I've got a really good one.
Yeah, I want to hear
yours. Last night, the U.S. men's national team played Trinidad Tobago in a World Cup qualifier, loss 2-1. They did not qualify for the World Cup for the first time in 30-some-odd years. I looked up the numbers. I'm a demographic person.
I thought we were better hockey players.
Trinidad has a population about the size of Salt Lake County. So the United States of America soccer team just lost to Salt Lake County.
300 million, and we just lost to Salt Lake
County.
I
mean, what in the world is that? That is a sad statement about U.S. soccer, and they better make some changes because the World Cup is everything.
How do you feel if you're Fox Sports, by the way, in that situation? Not to get to, you know, get off on sports.
Yeah.
They just spent 200 plus million to get the rights to broadcast the World Cup here in the United States.
Whoa, this
so
is
bad.
Pathetic. This is pathetic. And
Jim always feels
you
so
know,
bad
one of the things I love about soccer is the underdog can win, but over the course of a qualifying, you know, you must qualify, and this is just an incredible failure. So,
okay,
I got soccer into the program again.
You done good. Mia Love. So,
we want to replace her. We got to
get rid of her. March 6th, 17th, 26th, and April 5th through 8th.
He's got the details here.
Brought her campaign to Disney World, where she managed to spend $9,000, this is according to the official reports, she spent $9,727 politicking down at Disney World, including $1,655 for lodging, and get this, $4,780 on food. Wait a minute. Disney World, if you've been there, that's a couple of hot dogs. So
yeah,
maybe
a couple
I won't
of frozen
go there.
I was like, how
bananas.
Many churros is that?
Mia, really? Spending time campaigning in Disney World? Dave Hansen, who we all love, her campaign manager, says there were campaign fundraising events down there. Right, Dave. Produce the donors. That's what I want to say.
That's your gripe.
Goofy and...
So you don't think Mia can fundraise. Now you want to get rid of her and you don't think she can fundraise. I like it. So Jim, I'm just going to be on Mia's side and everybody's totally surprised by this. But if you have ever rented a hotel banquet room to run some kind of fundraiser in your life, you will recognize it's really expensive here in Utah.
Yeah.
You can only imagine that expense in Orlando.
Yeah, it and you pay for the room with the price of your
March,
food.
A lot more yeah.
March
expensive.
6th, 17th, 26th, and April 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Great time.
Yeah.
That's a lot of rooms.
Okay, so my gripe this last week has to do with the fact that we are not talking about sports enough on this show. and here's the thing, and this is why I say this. You know, we are watching an intersection, a weird intersection in American life. I was watching
sports and politics.
Sports and politics.
Yeah.
I was watching SportsCenter, which has been a daily tradition for me since mm-hmm. I was very young. And I remember the old days, it was nothing politics. And now it was scores, it was highlights, it was that kind of thing. And now I'm watching the show, and it is, I'd say a third of the show is politics and, you know, talking about related politics issues. And so in the past, sports used to be a safe place where you could go mm-hmm. to, like, avoid politics.
Leave it behind.
And not anymore. And that's, yeah. to me, a little bit of a gripe.
Yeah, and that tells you what's going on. Absolutely. I mean, you used to be able to go into the Vivint Smart Home Arena and leave everything outside and you just cheer for your team, but now they're getting, you know.
Used to be able to go to a town hall meeting, and now all they want to talk about is politics.
Yeah. Hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Our program is produced by Emily Means. We really appreciate you listening.